After the transfer of the Dene League treasury from Delos to Athens in 454, the Athenians began to use 1/60th of every ally's tribute for their own ends. We mentioned that last time. How do we know they use 1/60th? Well, we have these things called the Athenian tribute lists, and the Athenians dutifully recorded 1/60th of every ally's tribute that they were using, that they were embezzling, and how they were spending it. And they engraved these 1/60th amounts on stones, and so that also gives us an idea how much tribute each ally was paying, because we simply multiply that figure by 60. So isn't it nice that the Athenians were actually setting up a permanent record of how much they were embezzling? Also, as we've seen, the Delian League was a naval empire. That's not news to us now. Its existence depended on its fleet, and the Athenian vessels were rowed by the Thetes, the lowest of Solon's property groups. We're not yet in the era where slaves will be the predominant rowers. That's coming in, but not just yet. Now, the new democracy of Cleisthenes in 508, to call it a new democracy, proved triumphant in the Persian Wars, as we've seen. The people got a lot of self-confidence, ostracism was used for the first time, magistrates were held accountable, and so on and so forth. But this new democracy was still very much a moderate one, because it was dominated by the hoplite class, those who were wealthy enough to afford their own armor. And the aristocratic leaders were very much in favor of keeping democratic participation in the hands of these hoplites, in the hands of those who were wealthy enough to buy their own armor. And the Thetes couldn't afford this. And now, after the Persian Wars, that the Areopagus had recovered much of its earlier influence and administered the city, the Thetes were losing out big time. This situation evidently didn't sit well with them, because this was not what Solon's constitution was about. But the Thetes now had a voice, more so in the aftermath of the Persian Wars than ever before. And they had that voice because they were the rowers in the fleet. So as the city grew more powerful, correspondingly, so did the Thetes because of their vital role in the navy. The Delian League rested on its fleet. Fleets needed rowers. What if the Thetes said, we're not going to row anymore? And this power of the Thetes, if you like, this voice of the Thetes, began to be noticed. It's no coincidence that in the year 472, Aeschylus wrote a play, a tragedy, called The Persians. And it had as its plot the Greek victory over the Persians at the Battle of Salamis in 480. As such, this play, The Persians, championed the role of the Thetes, not only in the battle, but also by extension in the state. This play, if you like, becomes also a voice for the Thetes, showing the people how much they're dependent on them. Now, given that Athens's empire rested on its fleet, it's not surprising to see the Thetes wanting more political rights. And they came to view the Areopagus, which was still very much oligarchic in ideology, as a symbol of their oppression, that the council stood for everything that democracy was against. And perhaps Aeschylus' play had given the Thetes a sense of their very real importance. Perhaps it even helped them to unite as a force with which to be reckoned in the state. Now, it's fine to have a force, it's fine to have a voice, but what if there's no leader? And they don't seem to have a leader yet until Ephialtes comes along. So, if they were making demands for political change, they were largely ignored. But Ephialtes would change all that. I'd actually go so far as to say that even if Cimon hadn't been ostracized when he returned from Sparta, the very real chances were that Ephialtes' legislation would still have been passed in the assembly because of the power of the Thetes and their dissatisfaction. There's another heresy.